I just want to say RFK Jr. clearly has not been watching enough Netflix. Love on the Spectrum is an excellent show for anybody who hasn't seen it, and it shows people with autism going on dates. Rolling forward,
Dr. Sister Science Facts. I'm Dr. Stephanie Rowland.
And I'm Dr. Alicia Rowland.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the podcast. Our goal is to make health news more relatable, more understandable, and break it down from some of the confusing headlines into facts that make sense for you and your family.
We are practicing physicians. I'm a pediatrician and Stephanie's a psychiatrist.
And in addition to our clinical work, we also do research, which is funded by the NIH and other organizations.
This week, we're going to tackle the first press conference held by our new head of Health and Human Services, RFK Jr.
Was it really that this was his first?
This was his first.
He has made so many statements just all over the place that it feels like every day there's something new that he's saying.
But this is the first one that he stood behind the podium with the like official seal. So this one was fancy.
Well, it's especially concerning given what he spoke about. It was 30 minutes of a rant, a diatribe, a monologue. 30 minutes of a monologue about his views about autism, which range from concerning to alarming.
So this episode, we're going to play actual clips from his press conference and break down what he's saying to get the most factual information.
So let's get started.
I'm just going to start with a warm-up clip.
Oh, am I ready for this?
All you have to do is start reading a little science, because the answer is very clear.
Okay, so let's start reading a little science together. Everyone ready? Let's buckle up and start reading.
I feel like he should take his own advice.
Let's see.
Okay, so this press conference was held after the CDC released a new report the day before about the rates of autism that we're seeing in the United States and how the prevalence of autism has been increasing over the past 50 years. And I'm going to play a clip that RFK Jr. starts the conference with.
Overall, the autism is increasing in prevalence at an alarming rate. The ASD prevalence rate in 8-year-olds is now 1 in 31. Shocking. There's an extreme risk for boys. Overall, the risk for boys of getting an autism diagnosis in this country is now 1 in 20. This is part of an unrelenting upward trend. The prevalence 2 years ago was 1 in 36. The first ADDM survey was 22 years ago when prevalence was 1 in 150 children. In all the core states, the trend is consistently upward.
So let's start by just breaking that down. It is true that the rates of autism spectrum diagnosis has been rising since the 1960s, which is the earliest data that the CDC reports. So in the 1960s to the 1970s, it's estimated that 1 to 5 in 10,000 children were diagnosed with autism. By the 1990s, we see that increase to 10 to 20 children per 10,000 children. 2010's estimate is 30 to 40 out of 10,000 children. And currently we're at a place where we estimate the rate of autism spectrum disorder diagnoses is 40 to 50 children per 10,000 children. When you look at that, we've increased about tenfold in the past 80 years.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. We've increased from 5 cases per 10,000 to 50 cases per 10,000. However, there's a lot of other factors. And the one that I want to start with talking about is the diagnosis of autism. The diagnosis of autism has changed dramatically from the 1960s to today. So back in the 1960s, when a child was diagnosed with autism, these tended to be children who had very severe impairment.
These are children that often are nonverbal, they are not toilet trained, and they have a more significant impairment on their daily lives.
And in the 1960s and 1970s, that was our understanding of autism. over time, the definition of autism grew more broad. So right now, our definition of autism includes a couple of different traits: persistent deficits in social communication and social interactions, some restricted repetitive patterns of behavior, interest, or activities. These symptoms must be present in the early developmental period, cause clinically significant impairment, and not be better accounted for by another diagnosis. That is a much more broad definition than what was used in the 1960s, and it's a more broad definition than the diagnosis that was used 20 years ago.
And we're seeing this in the data. So there was a study published in 2015 that examined students in U.S. special education programs between the years 2000 and 2010. And the number of children with autism tripled during that time period, but the number of children labeled as having an intellectual disability significantly declined. And so research is suggesting that this significant increase in the diagnosis of autism is likely from this major diagnostic shift of having a different understanding of what autism is, having more rigorous criteria of diagnosing with autism, and more regular screening for autism.
And this is actually great news, because if a child is identified early in life as having autism spectrum disorder, they are eligible and they will benefit the most from early intervention services. And so the idea is that we want to screen everyone, we want to identify people as early as possible in order to ensure that they benefit from all of the medical advancements that we've had in the treatment of autism.
There's a large difference in the prevalence of autism from state to state. The state with the highest prevalence of autism is California, and the state with the lowest prevalence of autism is Texas. There's a pretty significant difference between the two, a fivefold increase in California, and it's very likely linked to the fact that California is pushing for more regular assessments of autism
in order to connect kids to services that are going to help them. You know, looking at it, I don't really think that California has 5 times the rate of diagnosis as Texas. What we're probably seeing reflected are the social practices around screening and diagnosis and connecting children to early interventions, which ultimately help reduce impairment and improve functioning, which is what we want as physicians. We want people to have less impairment and better functioning. It doesn't matter what that label is. Let's focus on how you're doing. And so that's always my focus.
During this press conference, RFK Jr. repeatedly said that changing diagnostics is not the cause of the increase in prevalence. And he actually says that people that perpetuate this idea that the change in diagnostics is leading to the increase in autism diagnoses are what he calls epidemic deniers.
One of the things that I think that we need to move away from today is this ideology that the autism diagnosis, that the autism prevalence increases, the relentless increases, are simply artifacts of better diagnoses, better recognition, or changing diagnostic criteria. So we know what the historic numbers are, and we know what the numbers are today, and it's time for everybody to stop attributing this to this ideology of epidemic denial.
So, I guess call me an epidemic denier, because I remember that the diagnostic criteria for autism spectrum disorder changed as I was graduating medical school. This was just over 10 years ago. There was a significant change to how autism was diagnosed and labeled. Asperger's syndrome got rolled into autism spectrum disorder instead of being its own diagnosis. And this led to a lot of people that I was taking care of being diagnosed with autism where they had not been diagnosed with autism 2 weeks earlier. And do I think that their symptoms all of a sudden changed? No, I think the diagnostic criteria changed. They received a new diagnosis, but ultimately they had the same symptoms, the same impairment, and needed the same levels of support as they did before.
It is possible that we're seeing an increase in the prevalence of autism due to a variety of reasons. One proposed mechanism has been the enhancements of medical technology and medical care since the 1960s.
So, for example, there have been so many medical advancements in order to help children who are born premature. And prematurity is a known risk factor for autism. It increases the risk of autism by about 30%. So in the 1960s, if you were an infant that was born less than 3.3 pounds, the chances that you would survive was about 25%. Versus 50 years later, it's about 80%. So we're seeing children who are born premature surviving at much higher rates and possibly going on to have a higher risk of autism.
And we know that the earlier that an infant is born, the higher the risk of autism spectrum disorder, with some studies showing that children born between 22 and 27 weeks gestation having nearly four times the risk of developing autism compared to full-term babies. Babies born at 22 weeks did not survive in 1960. Oftentimes, they weren't even offered resuscitation. So this is a dramatic change. This is a huge area of medical advancement since the 1960s to today. Even in my time in medical training over the past 10 years, we've seen dramatic improvement in the care for extremely premature babies.
And can also be contributing to this increased rate of autism. Another reason that we may be seeing an increasing rate of autism is actually, as we see the diagnosis shifting and changing and expanding, more adults are getting diagnosed with autism now.
I think RFK Jr. has something to say about that.
Oh, no.
It just takes a little common sense. If autism, if the epidemic is an artifact, a better diagnostic criteria or better recognition, then why are we not seeing it in older people? Why is this only happening in young people?
We actually are seeing it in people that are beyond childhood. Young adults between the ages of 26 to 34 are actually seeing the highest rise in autism diagnoses right now. So this is a group that, in order to have autism, these symptoms have to be present early in the developmental period. They've probably lived their whole life without being diagnosed, and now they're running into maybe needing additional supports in school or work or other places, being connected to care, and now being diagnosed with autism. Autism, which they had previously. I don't think that a 26-year-old is developing autism. This is a 26-year-old who has always had autism, but wasn't screened, diagnosed, or treated at an early age.
And I think this comes from our changing diagnostics, our changing understanding of autism. But we're seeing adults that have a lot of skills in coping and masking that are getting diagnosed at a later age as we understand autism better. I think a lot of us will have friends or know people, friends of friends, that were diagnosed as an adult.
You can hop on TikTok. I think there's a lot of TikToks about this specifically.
Growing up as an attractive, late-diagnosed autistic woman is a very jarring experience.
Discovering that I am autistic has saved my life.
There may be reasons that the diagnosis is increasing relating to diagnostics, as well as there may be reasons that the diagnosis actually is increasing because of advances in medical technology.
Now, RFK Jr. spent a lot of his time at the press conference saying that it was not caused by a change in diagnosis, but in fact that autism is a preventable disease, these are his words, caused by a quote environmental trigger, and that it's not genetic, and that we are doing this to children. So let me play you a couple clips.
This is a preventable disease. We know it's an environmental exposure. It has to be. Genes do not cause epidemics. They can provide a vulnerability. You need an environmental toxin.
I am so surprised by that quote. I almost need to hear it again. What we know about autism is that 90% of the risk is related to genetic factors. There's no single gene that has been pinpointed for most people with autism. But when you look at studies of twins, monozygotic twins, meaning that these are two individuals who developed from one egg, versus dizygotic twins, which are two separate eggs where they developed. Do I have my science right?
I was going to say identical versus fraternal twins.
I mean, that is so much easier. When you have identical twins, meaning they share all of the same genetic material, compared to fraternal twins who are siblings who develop in utero at the same time, scientists use that in sophisticated ways to see how much of the risk is shared between autism, and they find that this is largely genetic. So, for example, identical twins, if one twin has autism, the other twin with identical genetics has about a 75% chance of also having autism. Whereas if you look at fraternal twins, it's closer to 35% if they're same sex, or just under 20% if they're opposite sex twins. And so scientists use that to study and say most of the risk is related to genetics.
RFK Jr. goes on to talk about environmental toxins for quite a long time during his press conference and all the things that he's going to look into.
And we're going to look at all the potential culprits. We're going to look at mold. We're going to look at food additives. We're going to look at pesticides. We're going to look at air and water and medicines.
So more research is needed on environmental factors, because although most of the risk is genetic, it's likely that there are multiple genetic and environmental factors that are contributing to the development of autism. And there are studies that have suggested things like maternal obesity or heavy metal exposure. And we do need more research in order to identify it, but it's not those factors alone based on the science that we currently know.
Autism is complex. It's difficult to understand, and we definitely need more science dedicated to the cause of autism. I don't think one single thing in the water is going to be the answer. I don't think it's going to be food additives in Cheetos that's going to end autism. Like, I don't think it's going to be as simple as that.
Didn't he say he was going to have the answer by September?
Here we go. I'll play it.
And within 3 weeks, and probably we're hoping in 2 weeks, we're going to announce a series of new studies to identify precisely what the environmental toxins are that are causing it. This has not been done before.
Okay. So first of all, we just named some possible environmental factors for which studies have been done. That's how we've identified them. And second of all, within 2 weeks, it takes a lot longer than that to set up a solid scientific research proposal, and then a lot longer than that in order to get good results and be able to analyze and truly understand and interpret them. So that timeline is out of control.
He goes on to say a lot of things, and one of the rationales RFK Jr. has for this being environmental toxin as the cause of autism is that he believes that children that are diagnosed with autism have a regression around age 2, which is a really outdated way of thinking about autism, but I'm just going to play this clip.
These are children who should not be suffering like this. These are kids who, many of them, were fully functional and regressed because of some environmental exposure into autism when they're 2 years old.
This is a really common myth that we hear about autism. As a pediatrician, this is something that I hear a lot. This idea that children with autism regress around age 2, that they're developing normally, and then they move backwards, and there's a loss of milestones. This is true of some disorders, something like Rett syndrome, which can be a devastating syndrome. They stop being able to walk, they stop being able to talk, they stop being able to do things that they were previously able to do.
So kids who are walking and then can no longer walk. That's what regression refers to.
This is not something that we see with autism. In fact, we can see brain differences in children with autism as early as 6 months old. You can see really subtle differences in these kids. You can see changes in motor and social behaviors as compared to children that do not have autism. Things like they're not making social smiles, or they're making less eye contact with their caregivers than children who are ultimately not diagnosed with autism. And you can see these changes really, really early.
But typically screening doesn't start until 18 to 24 months, because you may have a child who's not doing the social smile at 6 months, and that's okay because they're going to do it at month 7, 8, 9. That's different than a child with autism who doesn't go on to reach that milestone at all. Although you see these subtle differences starting at a young age, we typically don't screen until 18 to 24 months because it's just too hard to know before that. because kids are still developing so fast and they really are all on their own timelines.
But when kids are diagnosed with autism, looking back, when you ask their parents or pediatricians, people recognize things like their child doesn't point at things that interest them or doesn't point things out to their families. They're not particularly interested in playing with other children. When you smile at them, they don't smile back.
They might have certain repetitive interests or things that they're very much into. And again, children without autism may have some of these. And that's why we don't start screening until 18 to 24 months. And then you're looking for that constellation of symptoms together, along with the impairment present from a young age, not accounted for by other differences. There's a lot that goes into the diagnosis.
We're going to look at all of that. We're going to look at obesity in the parents. We're going to look at the age of the parents. We're going to look at diabetes in the parents. And look at all of these potential exposures. And because of AI and because of the digitalization of health records and the mass of health records that are now available to us, we can do this much more quickly than has ever been done in the past.
I thought placebo control trials were what we needed, not AI combing through medical records. Typically, we expect certain protections so that you know that when you're going to your doctor, the government just isn't going to be in those records looking at information about you. We do need research, as we've said. We need research in order to better understand the environmental and better pinpoint the genetic factors that are contributing to autism, as well as research in order to help support and improve early intervention services, services for adults who are diagnosed later in life, and overall, again, reducing impairment, improving functioning.
And RFK agrees with this. In fact, he said the following.
People will know they can research and they can follow the science no matter what it says, without any kind of fear that they're going to be censored, that they're going to be gaslighted, that they're going to be silenced, they're going to be defunded, delicensed, and we're going to give them permission to do this research. And then we're going to open it up to the research community, and we're going to task them with certain outcomes. And we're going to have them come and bid on how to do the research. This is all being run by Jay Bhattacharya and I think Martin Koldorf may be also working on this, on designing the grant proposals.
I mean, I feel like I'm being gaslit when I listen to that.
We're both physician researchers. And we have been punished and we have been gaslit and we're being at risk of being defunded based on the work that we're doing.
Which is high quality science that has passed through multiple rounds of peer review at the NIH, multiple rounds of institutional review board and ethics review in order to help examine and advance science.
Researchers right now that are doing DEI work, researchers that are uncovering health disparities, researchers that are trying to improve health equity and improve health outcomes are being punished. And their funding is being removed by this government that they're saying, oh, RFK Jr. saying, oh, I won't defund you if you do the research that I like.
And the research that he wants is based on a completely fraudulent line of questioning, which is this vaccines and autism hoax, which was started by a man in the UK named Andrew Wakefield. He knew that this was a hoax. He was charged with misconduct. He lost his medical license, but he kept going on media. This medical study has now been retracted. It is known to be completely false, but the damage persists.
It has been called the biggest hoax in healthcare in the past 100 years.
And now we have leaders like RFK Jr. calling for science and research on vaccines and autism. And so, yeah, I'm concerned about their plan to get an answer by September, because it seems like they're going in with what they think they're going to find. And that's not the way to do science.
Not only do they want to get their answer by September and that they're calling for research that align with their views, they're also canceling other research that don't align with their views. And we've seen that. Like, we've talked about how grants have been canceled for researching vaccine hesitancy and trying to get a better understanding of why certain people are not vaccinating their kids.
And so with this first official press conference, I think it confirmed a lot of the fears that people had when RFK Jr. was nominated to this position. A lot of the discussion we heard during the confirmation hearings where people were questioning him about his history of anti-vaccine views. And it sounds like we're going to keep seeing this moving forward.
Overall, if this is the first press conference, I'm concerned. I'm concerned about what future press conferences will come up and what views we'll have going forward. RFK Jr. has announced that he is consolidating a lot of different branches of Health and Human Services together to create, under his like Make America Healthy Again, to create a division of chronic disease. And he's kind of picking and choosing from all these institutions.
Oh, yeah. He's picking and choosing, but I think they're going to cut the NIH budget 40% and then create a whole MAHA separate thing from the NIH.
And autism is a big part of that. Autism research is a big part of that. And my fear is that we're going to lose quality research to support his supporters and to support his ideas that like lead causes autism.
I mean, hopefully he thinks that lead causes autism, because at least then they would do something about lead, which is a known neurotoxin. And it's been completely absent from any of his conversations about making America healthy again, when that's actually something that we truly need attention and funding for.
President Trump has said that RFK Jr. will, quote, go wild on health. And I think this is the beginning of RFK Jr. going wild on health.
I don't even know where to start with it.
These are kids who will never pay taxes. They'll never hold a job. They'll never play baseball. They'll never write a poem. They'll never go out on a date. Many of them will never use a toilet unassisted. And we have to recognize we are doing this to our children, and we need to put an end to it.
I hate everything about that. First of all, saying we are doing this to our children is placing blame in an area that I don't think blame is warranted. People with autism have meaningful lives. And I think he is reducing people to this pigeonhole of disability focus, as opposed to recognizing all of the wonderful achievements and joys and milestones that people with autism reach.
I just want to say RFK Jr. clearly has not been watching enough Netflix. Love on the Spectrum is an excellent show for anybody who hasn't seen it. And it shows people with autism going on dates.
People are so much more than their diagnosis. And that's really what I don't like about this, is you can have a diagnosis and go on dates and play baseball if that's what you want to do. It's just really demeaning, really reductive, really blaming people. And like you said, missing the humanity of people. And that humanity is total.
I have a son who was diagnosed with autism when he was 2 years old. We've been through a lot of therapy, seizures, different issues, and I'm very proud that he's now a 19-year-old high school graduate. I didn't know what was teenager-related. I didn't know what was autism-related. I don't know which of these things made him download 60 episodes of The Price is Right. But I know that's not normal. The Price is Right is a fine show, but it is the same damn show every day.
RFK was talking about children like my daughter that are autistic, non-speaking, non-verbal, require substantial support, and may need that type of assistance for the rest of their life. No, not every parent of a child that has significant complex needs likes what RFK is saying. Do you know what I need to help my family? We need her Medicaid to stay. I need her direct support worker to be paid fair wages. I need her to be included at school and her IEP to be upheld. And I need day programs for when she gets older. We need help. We don't need a cure. And to everybody else, please don't look at my daughter as broken.
He's putting a value on a life, and that a life of someone with a disability is not equivalent or equal to a life with someone without a disability, which we have very much shown in literature is not true. It's like 80% of people with severe disabilities rate their life as excellent or good. And like, there is meaning in lives of people that have disabilities, and to claim that there isn't, I think is rude and dismissive and unkind.
And right after tax day, to somehow boil down our entire value to our ability to pay taxes? Like, dude.
I know, that's the first thing that you bring up, is that they won't pay taxes. This is bad for America because they won't pay taxes.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Above everything else. It's just, that comment really did not sit well with me. As a pediatrician who provides care for a lot of children that have a lot of disabilities, Are we saying that these lives shouldn't be saved? Are we saying that these lives have less meaning? Are we saying that these lives have less value? Because that doesn't sit well with me.
Me either. And I do a lot of emergency psychiatry work. I work with families mostly when they're in crisis. And I know that that is their worst day. And that is not who people are. And that is not reflective of what their lives look like or their value. We all have bad days. And there are times that we need more support. And that doesn't diminish our value. And so this was just a particularly gross moment.
And this idea that you're describing it as a preventable disease, it's particularly icky. Placing blame on families, on society, being like, you did this. When right now, we don't have a cause of autism. And it's not like we are knowingly pushing people into a like vat of nuclear waste that's causing autism. Like, we are not knowingly harming children. And it feels really sad to tell families that it's something that they did wrong, and that if they had not done X, Y, or Z, that their child would have a different outcome.
I feel like we got real dark.
Yeah.
But we do this in our free time because we think it's really important that families understand what's happening in healthcare today, what's changing, and what challenges physicians and researchers are facing.
Yeah, the cost is high, and we're replacing good research with maybe not so good research and dictating the narrative in a certain direction. And I'm worried that all the focus on environmental toxins for autism is going to remove some of the focus on genetic factors that cause autism. And this press for an immediate quick fix is going to make us fall behind where we would have otherwise been.
On that, this is the Rolling Forward podcast.
I'm Dr. Alicia Rowland.
I'm Dr. Stephanie Rowland. We'll be here next week with more updates.
We actually won't be here next week.
You're right. We are taking a week off because Alicia is going to a conference on pediatric academic societies.
That's right. PAS is the Pediatric Academic Societies, meaning it's one of the largest pediatric medical conferences a year. And as a pediatric emergency physician, we don't have our own separate conference. And so PAS is our biggest conference of the year.
And while she's there, Alicia is going to be presenting some of her research about how to identify and eliminate health inequities affecting youth in America today. So go, Alicia.
If you're going to be there, you can say hi. I'll have a poster. Well, and I actually have one of our, like a poster that we did together.
I will also have a poster, but I won't be there. So I'm very much looking to hear any updates from that meeting. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today.
And then we'll be back at the beginning of May. May already.
Oh my gosh. Thank you and take care.
In the meantime, you can reach out to us on social media or by email. Our email is rollinforwardshow. That's R-O-L-I-N forwardshow @gmail.com.
And we always appreciate hearing from you. It's such a joy. Rolling forward, Dr. Sister
Science Facts. Welcome to Rolling Forward. I started.
I wasn't ready. Okay.